Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are heading out of October into oblivion.
Well, we're heading into October from September.
Yes.
Or better said, we're in October and we just left September behind.
We did.
Mm-hmm. In the back, in the rearview mirror. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
Not much.
I'm sure you have a lot of work to be doing for the show this week.
Well, you're talking about the shooting in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
I think, mm-hmm. And I think Adam's going to probably handle most of the analysis.
You got to be gentle with that, don't you? I mean, you got to be careful.
No.
I guess I see people like if you say
we're not saying it's. I mean, yeah, we'd have to be gentle if you thought it was bull crap,
right?
But you know, there's no evidence to that. It's just that, you know, we're going to be targeting the shooter anyway, I mean, in analysis, because he's the guy that seems fishy. He's the wild card. He's the one, is this guy, did he do it? Is he ISIS? Is he not? Is he just nuts?
Some of the things I see come out are, there may be more than one shooter. And, you know, we're starting to get this whole...
You're going to hear nothing but craziness.
Crazy.
The two-shooter thing came from, I don't want to get into because we've really got nothing to do with our show, but I'll just say a couple of things. One, there were two holes in the two windows.
Right.
And somebody who monitored the police bands reported that the police said that one shooter's down and they had the second one's in custody.
Hmm.
So that's where that comes from.
Hmm.
Now, this could all be made up too, so we don't know.
Yeah.
Unless I hear a recording.
Well, let's get into what this show is all about. I guess, what do we call this? The lighter side of finance? Would that be a...
I don't know. How much lighter is it?
Well, it could be very heavy. You could get down and dirty with all sorts of analysis of balance sheets and...
The less boring is
instead of lighter. Yes, the more exciting side. Well, let me tell you what's going on here, give you a quick update. Small cap stocks are on fire, rallying, just kaboom, rocket ships moving incredibly higher. We talked about this a few weeks ago, that there was this potential for a catch-up trade. And to be honest with you...
They were the laggards.
They're the laggards. And I was just kind of looking at this from the aspect of, here's a possibility, not really trying to make an absolute prediction. And I'm looking at this, and you know what happened? But now what happened was, President Trump comes out with a framework, there's quotes around that, a framework of the tax plan... And small cap stocks went crazy. I mean, I'm talking about a 5.5% move in like a week and a half.
Yeah.
And large caps kind of lagged a little bit. This is really good if it goes through, potentially for the smaller companies out there. There's a lot more tax benefit for them than for others. So for a lot of reasons. But basically, this could be really good because of some of the write-offs that they get, the lower tax rates possibly for the pass-through organizations, as we've talked about. So the bottom line is that the month of September did close on an upbeat note, and now that's carrying forward into October. And we've talked about this too, that seasonally, these 2 months have shown some of the weakest returns for markets. So I did a little bit of research. So we saw last month where that, remember that chart we had where it showed... that September was one of the weakest months of all the 12 months on a historical basis.
Right.
But we didn't say it was negative or bearish. It was just weaker. Could be positive. So I looked back and I said, okay, what's going on with October? Because October, we know there's been some pretty significant and severe sell-offs. We saw that Black Monday, which was October 19th, 1987. Yeah. So I went back to 86. And I pulled out all the October monthly returns for the S&P 500. And what I found was that on a monthly basis, the S&P 500 index has been positive 64% of the time, which is interesting. And again, this is with some of the most severe downturns in the markets. We've seen a couple of them. There was a 21% drawdown in October of 87, a crash of about 16% of October 2008. And even so, if you take this all together, the average October is up 0.75% for the month.
Yeah, it makes you think that it's generally up.
Yeah.
But when it goes down bad.
Right. It could be a really rough period. I'm not sure what that is. Is this November, December, January, February, March, April? Yeah. It's 6 months from April. April's also a questionable month. And a lot of people have said that the reason for April being a weak month is because this is the month that a lot of people have to distribute assets from their IRAs. I'm not sure what the 6 months has to do with, but there's something to do with that 6 month period where people are possibly looking towards the last quarter to take some capital gains. But interestingly enough, this year, as we thought last year, people probably will be holding on to their positions, looking for a lower tax code, a tax rate in the tax code next year, therefore postponing any major sales with gains into 2018.
It's an interesting, yeah, it sounds right.
Yep. So anyway, but the other thing, I'll mention one other thing. If you look at all of the months since 1986, you take the average return of the S&P 500 since 1986, the average is just the same as 0.74, where October's 0.75. I mean, there's no difference there. So it's the average, nothing major. I don't know what will cause a major drop here, although, again, you know, we've tinkered around with ideas between the Fed and them screwing up. And now there's this. Did you see the news on Yahoo today?
No, I didn't.
So do you remember Yahoo was hacked? And it was right. It was a certain
hacked and hacked and hacked. And they didn't talk much about it.
But, you know, and they come out with, well, this amount of people were hacked and these amount of accounts were hacked. And then a few months, this is like a year and a half after it happens. Then a year after that, no, we have to update it. And it actually was this amount, right? So the latest report out today says all of their accounts were hacked. 3 billion.
Sounds right. It seems to me that if you're going to hack at that level they're talking about, it would be everybody.
Yeah. But how, first of all, I can't believe they have 3 billion accounts.
Most of them are probably dead or dormant or bogus. I would say at least half. But I could see them having maybe a billion accounts, maybe. That probably a lot of those are dormant or hardly used, but.
But it's amazing that they're allowed to get away with this, where they take, you know, where they put out this information about this, just like Equifax, years later or months and months later. And they seem to put it out in pieces that is more palatable to the public. And nobody does anything about it. They just smack it.
The regulators don't seem to care.
They don't.
I think it's a regulation issue, too. I'm sure there's regulations they're in violation of.
But there seems not to be. The only thing that happens is the CEOs leave or the company's bought out and everybody gets all sorts of money for it. It's almost like it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think some of that money should go to the shareholders and it never does.
And on the topic of crazy things, you know, we've talked about time and time again that whenever there seems to be some kind of a terrorist attack, markets go up. Have you noticed this? Monday was the Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's like gun sales go up.
Yeah, the gun stocks went crazy on Monday. As did a couple other ones, which I'll have one name for our game at the end of the show. But the market was up like 175 points. The Dow on Monday after this terrible situation in Las Vegas. Now, I don't know what that has to do with markets. What Las Vegas? I mean, even the Las Vegas Sands and the Wynn did fine for the day. You would think there's going to be some kind of a potential, you know, people would say, well, maybe I don't want to go to Vegas, you know, whether they're right or wrong. But just that's the mentality of people, right? I'm not going there. Maybe I'm not going to buy tickets to a concert.
Yeah. Or they go just the opposite and they say, oh, it's dangerous. I'm going to go because it's more exciting.
Or maybe I can get cheap rates now.
Yeah, there's that too.
Well, let me just continue on with some of the things going on in the markets. The ISM manufacturing report was out, very strong reading. As a matter of fact, the ISM is a chart there over on dhunplugged.com. if you notice that line that spikes up there, mm-hmm. that's the ISM manufacturing. Tomorrow, I believe the non-manufacturing or service index comes out. But the manufacturing index is above 60. This is the first time since 2000, the highest since 2011, and the fourth highest since 2004. I mean, this is a pretty good reading.
Yes. What does it mean?
It means that manufacturing is doing very well. Orders are very strong. And that means the economy is somehow at least looking from a manufacturing standpoint as it's not going anywhere near recession for some time to come.
Hmm. Well, that's what it looks like.
That's what it looks like.
It's a very good looking upturn, yep. I have to say.
And even seeing, and we'll see tomorrow more about the next chart, which is the blended composite, which blends about 30% of the manufacturing index and 70% of the services index, which is a read on actually what the U.S. economy is all about, because that's the breakdown. So we'll see about this tomorrow if there's going to be a very significant move. We've seen that Europe PMIs, they call them PMIs. We call them ISM numbers. They call them PMIs. Their PMIs have been really good, really strong in Europe, Japan. Mm. The service index tonight came down a little bit. But around the world, even in China, things are looking really strong. In Singapore, they saw a report today, a 35% increase in exports. So, I mean, and that's with the dollar being as weak as it is. So something's going right. I'm not going to pin it on anything in particular, but it seems to be the coordinated Fed moves and central bank moves around the world are starting to really pick up some steam.
Yeah, it looks like they've done their job.
They've done their job. Now they can go home.
That's kind of what they're supposed to do.
Where did I put this?
Not go home, but do their job.
So now speaking about the Fed, it seems that all of a sudden the idea of President Trump picking a new and appointing a new or appointing the next Fed chair, I'll say not new, the next Fed chair is on the table hot and heavy. This just happened.
When is Yellen's term up?
I think February. Mm. And I think she gave one of those I serve at the pleasure comments. So
meaning she wants to be re-upped.
Well, she wants to be re-upped. The problem with Yellen is that she is really big on regulation and on the Fed and other government bodies regulating, in particular, the financial services industry. And with this administration looking to deregulate, they're banging heads. Now, if you want to be objective about it, I think it's that's good. What, don't you think that it's good that there's a checks and balances between the various components of
I'd rather see that than a bunch of yes men surrounding everybody.
Or people, not only yes men, that are all for breaking down all the regulations and just letting the financial services industry run amok.
Yeah, go crazy.
Yeah.
Because it would.
They will. Oh, there's not a question there, is there, John?
No, none ever.
I mean,
actually, I'm kind of on Yellen's side on this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think there needs to be some regulation. I don't know if there needs to be these crazy strict things. Although, on the other hand, I think we can make the argument that it is our money that they are the fiduciary of, and it is not right to do all the things they do that cause such potential pain that requires bailouts, which is our money too.
Yes.
I mean, they should be banks. It's not like they need to be so crazy. I mean, the banks are crazy aggressive. They do some very strange things with money. I guess it's because it's money. The greed factor. So the Trump aides have given the president a short list of candidates. And the question is whether Yellen's in trouble. Gary Cohn, Kevin Warsh. Now, this guy, Kevin Warsh, I've been seeing more and more comments about him as possibly the lead candidate. But he seems to be, I think back in 2011, when he was involved with the Fed, I don't remember exactly what his position was, but he was talking about how when the unemployment rate was like 9%, that the Fed should start backing off already. Backing off with their stimulus. Mm. So if this guy's going to be a stimulus hawk, I don't know how that's going to work unless he's so on the whole deregulation front that it doesn't matter and they're not concerned about any of this.
Mm.
There's a few others, like four names. Supposedly he's going to have an answer in the next couple of weeks.
Well, it seems to me that you don't mess with a good thing. I'd keep yelling in in business.
Yeah, the devil you know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's done a good job. I mean, I think that personally, I think they should have raised rates a long time ago. But, you know, who's going to argue with the fact that, well, markets are going up and markets are happy, bonds are happy.
Yeah, and the manufacturing numbers are good and all the rest of it.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. We'll see how markets react if it's anybody but Yellen.
Maybe they should put her on a month to month.
Oh, maybe like on a consulting, kind of wean her off solely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea. So last week we talked about, remember that Warren Buffett had said that what year was it? He said that the U.S. economy, that the Dow Jones will be over 1 million in 100 years.
Right.
So listener Travis Roberts tweeted in, he said that's he calculated a 3.75% annual rate of return. Which would make sense. If money doubles in...
So it's over 100 years.
Yeah. If money doubles or something doubles in 10 years at 7.2%, I mean, you could definitely get up there from 25, you know, because it keeps on doubling.
Yeah.
And that's a 3.5%. So somebody could check that number, but I took it at face value. So that's under the average of what the Dow Jones has done historically. It's closer to like 6.5%.
Well, it may be getting started from a lower basis.
Maybe.
I mean, we have, there's been no major correction. There's been nothing going on. And everyone's talking about the bond crisis or the bond scam or the bond collapse that's going to happen. And when that happens, it'll reset this thing. It should usually goes down, 20-30% at least when in the crash situation, the thing would be down to way down.
I mean, a 20% correction is not an absurd number. I mean, right now, a 5% correction would be like people would be freaking out running in the streets naked.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Crazy. Oh, my God, the sky's falling. But, you know, can you imagine a 10% correction? People would be just besides themselves. They wouldn't know what to do. They'd be just.
Well, no one. We haven't seen it for so long. People are just like, what's going on? This is the end of the world.
Yeah. Buffett also talked about he was also on, I think it was today, talking about possibly why markets won't sell off. And he said, again, this just confirms what I was saying earlier. He was on CNBC and he said that Berkshire Hathaway, the company he manages holds, is holding off on selling to see how the tax reform situation plays out in Washington. So he's not selling either to see till after the tax reform is done. Which goes along with the whole idea that people are probably just sitting on their hands right now.
Well, that's actually not a good thing, I don't think.
Why?
Because what you're going to have everybody sitting on their money, they're holding back. Then they get the word what happened, you know, the new changes that have been made, and they take advantage of it. They all start selling it once. That can't be a good thing.
I would think that if everybody's, I agree that it's just holding on and nobody's kind of letting anything out. That means you get letting anything go. You get a stretched valuation. People start getting more and more antsy, right? I mean, think about yourself. You hold a stock. You're like, I'm going to hold on to it for a little while. I'm going to hold on to it. And I'm feeling good about it. All right, you know, I'm going to sell it. All right, you know what? Let me hold it a little bit longer. What happens is the longer you hold it, the more with the idea that one day you're going to sell it, not the idea that you're going to hold it forever, you get more and more antsy and you get more concerned. And when that happens, you pounce and you maybe make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
All right. And that's all you have to say about that, huh?
I just think it just sounds, I'm distressed. I'm always expecting the worst anyway, but, you know, and we're in October, which is one of those months where all hell can break loose. And we have, you know, these little cities are starting to show signs of deterioration and the infrastructure hasn't been worked on. And then we have this manufacturing thing going. I know the whole thing is just doesn't make, and it doesn't make any logical sense.
There is, I agree with you, there is a disconnect between some of the logic of what's gone on, but that's been going on for a little while now.
Yeah, and Trump, you know, is like, there's no reason for things to go better in the market because of Trump.
Well, do you remember before he was elected, what he said about the markets and the economy?
I can't remember.
Oh, I'll tell you very clearly. He said, the markets are riding on like a sugar high. They're too high. They're terrible. They're just overvalued. It's crazy. And the economy is in the worst shape he's ever seen.
Yeah, that's what he said. I remember that now. Yeah.
And then and now the market is, hey, he tweets all-time highs for the S&P 500.
Well, that's the way he always – he's like that. He was the same way with polls, if you remember.
Right.
If it was a poll that said good things about him, it was fantastic, fabulous poll. The other polls he either ignored or said, fake. Ah, polls are no good. Who cares?
Fake.
Yeah, fake polls.
Fake polls. Yeah, but people seem to attribute some of this to at least some of the deregulation attacks from them. But well, anyway, all right, let's kind of make a segue somewhere else. A little bit more excitement and a little bit more energy into this one. I don't know if you saw this, but the UK's biggest, one of their biggest airlines, like Monarch Airlines. Have you heard of this?
You know, this is funny. I saw the story, and I don't want to seem naive, but it's like one of those stories you're reading, you think to yourself that after you read the whole story, you go, who the hell's Monarch Airlines?
Well,
it turns out they're huge.
Right. Well, what's really interesting about this, so Monarch Airlines seemingly overnight went belly up. Okay. It's the longest surviving airline brand for Britain. It was a 4 a.m. announcement, and 110,000 customers had to be brought home on specially chartered planes, and a further 750,000 told that their bookings have been canceled. Now, I have a stupid question, a crazy question. You're an airline. You're going bankrupt. You're closing down. Why then would you have to pay a specially chartered plane outside of your airline just to kind of clean up all the people that you have maybe coming back and forth from wherever they are? Doesn't that seem
zero sense?
Just use your own airline.
You're an air. Yeah, exactly. You're an airline.
I just don't understand this. Okay. And I get how the other 750.
Well, you might take it to the next level. They have 750,000 people booked. That's cash flow.
Yeah. I don't even understand this whole thing. 2,100 Monarch employees face losing their job. Administrators and unions say they hope they could. That they hope many could be taken on by other airlines that are interested in buying parts of Monarch's business. I just don't understand how you do a 4 a.m. kind of kerplunk, it's all over, how that was such a surprise move and why they have to make these emergency types of cancellations and emergency pickups. The whole thing is just a clusterfuck.
Well, it sounds to me like I don't want to sound too conspiratorial, but it sounds to me like the whole operation was mob run.
And then what happened?
And they were all going to get busted, but for racketeering. And so maybe the whole thing's a giant scam. Mm.
That's an airline.
And they had to bail as fast as they could because that's – you're right. Because we've watched Continental and TWA and all these other carriers, and they ease out of it. They're still flying.
Right. It forever. I mean, yeah,
pretty much.
Alitalia, I think, is still bankrupt. They've been bankrupt forever.
Yeah, and they're flying around.
They're flying around just fine. But maybe I don't know what happened with the government in England. I don't know. But it is like a restaurant that closes doors, takes it whatever they can, and just puts a closed sign up, you know, one night out of nowhere on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Never to be found again. That's crazy. On another great story. I thought this was interesting because I always thought about doing this myself. So if you buy things on Amazon, I'll tell you, for example, I bought recently a bunch of supplies for the hurricane. I told you about this.
And yeah, you did through Amazon. It was very smart.
Well, maybe it didn't tell you the end of this story.
Oh, so
it was a smart idea. A smart idea, right? So what happened was I ordered some batteries and I got the, let me think what happened here. I got the AAA batteries. Oh, the D batteries didn't come till after the storm. So I type Amazon. I said, hey, by the way, I want to return this, blah, blah, blah. They said, just keep the package. We're just going to refund your money. Okay.
I've had that happen to me, and most people that work with Amazon have had that happen to them.
Right.
It's not worth the trouble to send it back. We'll just send you some new stuff.
Just keep it. So... here's what happened with that in mind and why I thought it was such a great idea. Scammers have known about this. So, you know, you talk with these customer service agents, you do the chat and whatever, and it seems easier, like you said, to get them to just say, forget it. We'll just forget it. A couple in Muncie, Indiana, decided to take the scheme very far. They went and stole upwards of $1.2 million worth of electronics, according to the Justice Department. This couple, Eric Finan and Lee Finan, were charged in May and recently pleaded guilty to federal mail fraud and money laundering by claiming the electronics they ordered had shown up damaged. The couple scored GoPro cameras, Xbox game consoles, Samsung smartwatches, Microsoft Surface tablets, by creating hundreds of fake online identities to conceal their crimes. Now, I have questions. So they create this identity. I don't know. They create all these email accounts. By the way, that's why probably Yahoo had all those accounts, because all these fake email accounts for people doing all this scamming.
Yahoo's a good place to do it.
Yeah, you just set up all these email accounts. So didn't they know that the stuff was going to the same address? Doesn't Amazon cross-reference addresses?
Well, here's let's take it one level higher and look at it from this kind of more humorous perspective. This is a company that uses artificial intelligence, and they use all these. They have these databases so they can direct advertising right to you, knowing that you want to buy this sort of thing. And they have all these big game about how they know their customers so well that they can, target them for certain things that they know they're going to want to buy. Well, obviously, this is nonsense.
Yeah. They know nothing about you.
They know nothing. They see that you bought something and then they say, I don't know, just take a shot at it.
I don't even understand how $1.2 million worth of electronics. That's not, especially with the ones they talked about. Xbox console, Microsoft tablets. Well, maybe $1,000 at a clip, but you still got to get 1,000 of those.
It's unbelievable. They've been buying all kinds of things constantly. And you'd think they would have caught on to it before they racked up a $1.2 million.
It's an amazing. That's at least what they found. But I can't imagine. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. But it seems that this is, they pled guilty. So I guess they did it.
Well, they did something.
Yep. Switching over to automobiles for a second here. I don't know if you've been watching this, but there was a lot of trouble in the auto industry for a while as what was happening, as we've talked about, they were doing these long-term leases and long-term buying deals where they basically stole from their future, because instead of a 4-year deal, it was a 7-year deal. So there was like 3 years where people wouldn't be buying cars, and that turnover was a big problem. Plus, they had a big problem with subprime lending and the fact that people were now, the whole concern about, nobody's buying a car anymore because Uber's going to take over the world. All the different things that went into the end of the automobile industry. But if you've been watching some of the things that have been going on, in particular on General Motors, and this is primarily, I think, post the Texas Hurricane Harvey, where about 300,000 to 500,000 cars were submerged. And if you look at the chart, that again, we put these charts over on DH Unplugged. You can check these out after. Look at that move. Now, when was the hurricane? It was like mid-September?
It was right where that move began, I believe.
Yeah, that was the beginning of October. That was just 2 days ago.
Well, no, look at that. I've been looking at the chart. The move really started
mid-September.
July, August, around September.
Yeah. I mean, it went from about 37 to 43 in the last couple of days, have been like a parabolic move straight up.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that's driving this, I think, is first of all, they've been in such a problem for so long. Second of all, they have like a 3.9% yield. Ford has over a 5% yield. They also announced they'll begin selling 2 new all-electric vehicles in the next 18 months. And will have 20 zero-emission electric vehicles in its lineup by 2023. Does that mean they're going all electric? 20?
Well, they may be talking about models, 4-door, 2-door, same car. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, the only car, and I've talked about this before and everywhere, because I've test-driven all these electric cars, the only car that's worth a crap is the Volt, because it has a little motor in it.
Yeah, but these aren't
otherwise,
out yet. These aren't out yet, so you don't know what these are going to be.
Yeah, you're white-knuckled all the time in these other cars.
What, you're afraid you're going to run out of juice?
Yeah, totally. It's very nerve-wracking. These electric cars are nerve-wracking.
But don't they have a battery gauge on them? And it's
what a joke of a gauge.
Oh, really? 10%, 20%, no good?
It's unbelievable. You have to get one of these cars and you have it for a week or two and drive it around and see how much you like it. It's not enjoyable. The Volt is fine because it's got a little motor in it. You don't care. Thing craps out. Motor takes over. It's 150 horsepower. It's enough to get you around. And then you're good.
So it has like a little mini generator in it. That's what it is, really. Is it charging the battery?
It's charging, and it also is generating direct power.
Right. So it's like the alternator in your car that's charging your battery as you drive.
It's a little more complicated than that, and you have to kind of read all the way they do it. It's not like a hybrid. Mm-hmm. It's a little different, but it's not like a diesel locomotive either. Which I always thought would be a good idea, just have the thing drive electric motors. But it's a little different. It's very complicated, actually.
The car is
cool because everything you do in the car, short of the steering wheel, turning the, if you take a left turn, it doesn't add power to it. But when you're braking, it just regenerates, and it's really a fantastic vehicle. It's surprisingly nice.
But it's so small, isn't it?
You know, the thing about it, no, I don't think so. It's not really that small. I think it's bigger than a Ford Focus.
Well, that's small.
For sure.
Yeah.
Smaller than they are. Ford Focus is actually pretty roomy. But it's not that small. It's not like Cadillac, that's for sure. But it's. Yeah.
Well, these are something to watch. I'd like to see how these are going to move because I was pretty surprised at this move. And a lot, like I said, a lot of it may be due to the replenishing market of, after the hurricane. But we'll see if this can be sustained. But it's pretty impressive, that move, for especially for the fact that everybody left these companies for dead.
Yes, I agree.
Now can we just go on to something more exciting here? I mean, I'm gonna pump it up one more level.
Okay.
You know what my favorite car is?
What?
The Aston Martins.
Have you ever driven one?
Yes, I drove one. Now let me back up. My favorite car from a design and a beauty and just a looking standpoint is an Aston Martin. There's a couple of different ones in that lineup. The price of it,
they're very pretty.
The price of it, the actual car itself, the maintenance requirements of it and all that, not happening. But I like the car. You like the cars, right?
I think they're beautiful, yeah.
You've driven in them?
I've driven an older one.
Yeah.
But I've never driven one of these new ones that I don't know if I'd want to. The things cost a fortune.
In the 200,000 range plus.
Yeah.
But the British automaker has now unveiled its first submersible designed submarine, basically, at the Monaco Yacht Show. Dubbed the Project Neptune, it's a three-person vehicle with silver blade-like pontoons and an acrylic bubble for a cabin so you can see things outside. Now
there's this company up in the Pacific Northwest that makes these things.
There's a few, yeah. There's actually one I think in Florida, they teamed up with a company called Triton. Mm. So Aston Martin expects that the sub will be available in about a year, and be priced about $4 million.
A little high.
Yeah. Well, the chief creative officer.
I think one good run. Out of Colombia with a load of cocaine probably pays for it, but still a little high.
One quick
run. I think that's the idea. Pays for itself.
So it's 5.9 feet tall and 8,800 pounds, which, by the way, 8,800 pounds, to put that in perspective, is the weight of a small boat, a 25-foot boat. So it's not that heavy.
Okay.
It's the lightest and smallest three-person sub in production, and it's capable of diving 1,650 feet, has a speed of traveling at about 3.5 miles an hour, and it's air conditioned. You can see James Bond with a hottie in the cabin drinking some champagne at the end of a James Bond film.
Yeah, end of a traditional James Bond film.
Right.
Nowadays, it's no.
So take a look at this picture.
No sex.
I put a picture up there of what the prototype is. I guess that bubbly thing is the acrylic that you could look out of.
It's kind of weird looking.
Very weird looking. It's got the LEDs in the front, and I'm not sure what's going on the top there.
I don't know what all that crap is.
I mean, that black top thing.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
I don't know. Maybe it's used for some kind of propulsion or some kind of balance or or navigation or...
You need to get a picture that shows that has arrows pointing to these things, saying what they are.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's skip over to Puerto Rico. Still about 90% without power. And I tell you, I could personally feel for them because I was out of power for a number of days. They've been out of power for what, 2 weeks now?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think so.
And with all that standing water, the mosquitoes must be hell.
Getting bit left and right.
Yeah. Want to give you a quick update on commodities, where they are this year. This is a full list is on over on the show notes for episode number 377 of DH Unplugged. By the way, if you want to follow John C. Dvorak on Twitter, you could go to The Real Dvorak, his Twitter handle, The Real Dvorak. Myself, Andrew Horowitz. Of course, if you feel compelled at all from all the excitement that we're giving you to donate to the show, you can feel free to do so. By the way, did you go to Trader Joe's yet?
No, I meant to.
All right.
I will do it.
I understand. Well, you can donate to the show anyway over on DH Unplugged. Just click one of the donate buttons. We encourage you to do so to pay for our servers and our drinks and our sport jackets and all of our good times out, of course. And but really what it does is it pays for some of the things like the shirts that we give away for the DH Unplugged Close to the Pin competition, the end of year trophy, and it does pay for the servers and things like that. So please do us a favor. Dig deep, really deep. And donate to the show. Okay. All right. So here, take a look. Why don't you go through these commodity returns? Some of these, not all of them.
Okay. Here's a quick update on commodities this year. The big winner, which I don't think, well, maybe you could guess it. Aluminum. Up 38.2%. Now, what would account for that?
Cars.
Think?
Oh, yeah.
Cars?
Cars, yeah. Okay. Well, there's a lot of things. Could be a lot of people are bulking up in the bunker with all sorts of canned fruits.
Yeah, most cans are on aluminum. Copper up 18%. That could be from a bunch of things. Gold's up 11%, which is usually just a financial trade. Wheat 11%, which is kind of a surprise. Silver 5%. Heating oil 4%, which seems reasonable. Corn pretty much neutral. But on the downside, collapse in prices, orange juice.
I don't get this.
I'm saying the same thing as you speak.
I don't understand this. I'm having
orange,
difficulty.
Oranges, the whole southern Florida orange grove area was wiped out. Now, why is orange juice down?
Maybe it was down significantly more. I have to look into this.
Yes, please do. Natural gas is down as usual. Lean hogs down, sugar down, and lean hogs is down 10%, sugar 7%. Coffee's down 6.6%, which is another surprise to me, because that would be something you'd think is going up because of all the hipsters and Starbucks and all the rest. Soybeans are down 4%, crude oil's down 4%, we knew that. And then gasoline down 4%, which is hardly much of a move.
You know, the thing about sugar, coffee, cocoa, soybeans, you know, and all these various foodstuffs is that while we could predict that there's a big, for example, let's say that people are just buying coffee only for their beverage of choice. I mean, and coffee sales are through the roof. Let's just go there. Okay. But coffee could still be down because you know what? It's all about weather related and crops and how much the yield is off the various farms and all. And you could have a bumper crop of coffee and that offsets the demand.
Yeah, that would do it. And that could be what it is with coffee.
Lean hogs may have. Soybeans are down. Isn't soy used in everything?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They may be overproducing.
It could be. Or somebody's underbuying. And maybe the other problem you have with this is that sometimes you see that countries will stock up. They'll you know, they'll find ways to buy it when it's on the cheap. And then when prices rise, for example, they don't buy as much anymore, and it kind of holds down prices and holds down production. And or if prices start moving up, you know, it's all, it's very cyclical commodities, because prices move up and what happens is they shut down mines. When prices move down, they shut down mines. You know, they don't want to produce anymore. When oil prices drop off a cliff, and then it goes the other way around, and then it gets too high, and what happens is then...
Well, that's what the commodity market's for, is to kind of naturally or unnaturally, I actually would say unnaturally, regulate all these businesses.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, we have a new announcement. Big announcement here. We have the closest to the pin. I need your number, by the way.
Okay, I'll give it to you at the end of the show.
Yeah, or send it to me. Send me an email. So nobody, we don't want people to know the numbers. It's all a secret.
No, I'm trying to hang up at the end. Never mind. Okay. I'll mail it to you.
Yep, yep. So we're announcing a close to the pin for Equifax. And by the way, when Equifax was in a free fall, it went from 143 down to 91-ish. I looked at the chart and it said 92 looks like a good number here. If it could hold this, it's at like 111 today. So it's moved up.
Yeah, this is a good one because it's so flaky. You have no, and you can't know what's going to go up, is going to go down. It could go, I mean, it should go down, it seems to me, and go out of business.
Well, only about 10% or 50, 10 to 12%, I believe it is, of their business is involved in this whole credit reporting thing. Now, what's also happening here is, they're allowing people, or they're going to allow people, to lock down their credit reports. Banks are freaking out about this. Anybody that loans money on the fast, you know, car dealers, they're freaking out about this. Because if people could lock down their credit reports, it can't just be easily accepted and opened up.
Right.
So anyway, you go over to DHM Plug, go to the close to the pin. It's on the top right. It'll give you a little countdown clock there, and just quickly put in your price guess, and whoever is closest to the actual price on closing Friday the 20th of October will get a one-of-a-kind DHM Plugged t-shirt and certificate. Very exciting.
Yeah.
So I keep on talking about this word framework. Do you have any issue with the word framework?
Not really.
I find the framework is offensive.
Why?
Because whenever...
And give us the context in which you're finding this word to be problematic.
So when you see politicians say that we have come and agreed to a framework in principle, you know, or they use,
instead of using the word plan.
Yeah, plan, exactly. We've come to an agreement, or just come to an agreement about a plan. They use the word framework, which always seems to me slippery way of getting out of it. So the word framework is like just a, you know, a wire.
It's a bullcrap word.
I think it is.
Okay. I'm not going to argue.
I mean, I've seen it so many times with the European Union. We have a framework for the discussion. It's like, what does that mean? That means it doesn't mean what you're even a plan. It just says if somebody threw some things against the wall and said, you know, insert your plan here and we'll see if it flies.
Okay.
But even
you don't like the word.
Yeah, but even more disturbing to me is what's going on in Egypt. I don't know if you saw this, but in Egypt, there's some things happening in the Middle East. For example, recently Saudi Arabia has allowed for women to drive for the first time.
Yeah, well, they're phasing that in.
Okay, but they're going to at least allow it. They've gotten to the point of they can find their way to allow women to drive. But now in Egypt, there were a bunch of men that were waving a rainbow flag at a Cairo pop concert. Did you see this?
No, this I did not see, but I can imagine what happened.
Oh, it's bad. Now, for whatever reason, I don't know how you get to this point here. I don't know how you connect the dots here, okay? But Here's straight what it says, that Egypt is going to be conducting anal examinations on men accused of waving the rainbow flag at a Cairo pop concert.
What are they going to be looking for?
If they've ever had any anal intercourse, I assume, because it's illegal there.
Well, how can you tell by looking?
You're asking the wrong fellow. Okay, I assume that it's like, you know, listen, if a woman is raped. They look and they see if anything happened, if there's any kind of scarring and if there's any kind of whatever. So I suppose the same thing about the buttocks. I am not an expert in this area. I'm not even a novice in this area, so I can't really tell you about this from a medical standpoint. But I think this is taking it kind of either to an extreme. You know, doing these anal exams. I mean, it's embarrassing, too.
So I wonder who's going to be the butt inspector.
I know. I just see more butts.
And won't that guy, if they actually put that job out, won't he be a little suspect?
Yep. And then, you know, if he can actually tell what's going on, that means he knows. That means
he's got to be arrested.
He's got to get an anal exam. He's got to be and this just creates like a whole daisy chain of these things.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, that's your news story of the day, I guess.
I suppose. Stupid people, I don't understand something. You have a good insight into this, not being stupid, but about this topic. I don't understand why people feel compelled to put whatever they want on social media, which is mini blogging, right? That's what it is, mini blogging?
Kind of. Although on Facebook, you can go on and on. Put more stuff up there than you ever would on a blog.
But I don't understand why people are compelled to put up things that could possibly get them in trouble with their company or we know the fact that it's not ever, even if you delete it, somebody could have screen grabbed it or...
Oh, somebody always screen grabs stuff if it's nasty.
Right. So it's this woman, CBS Corp fired a vice president for business affairs Monday for comments she made on social media regarding the mass shooting at the country music festival in Vegas. Her name is Haley Geftman Gold, obviously a Jewish woman. She wrote on her Facebook page that she was not sympathetic to victims of the shooting because she claimed most country music fans are Republican.
Yeah, so it's okay to shoot Republicans, according to her.
Right.
I saw her post.
She also wrote, if they wouldn't do anything when children were murdered, I have no hope. They keep going back to the Sandy Hook thing, you know? I have no hope that...
And what are they talking about? Won't do anything. Here's what I always like to say to people that are all bent out of shape about the gun laws. Go out, put an organization together if you're so strongly, you feel so strongly about this, and repeal the Second Amendment. Boom. Problem solved.
Well, we know people get guns anyway, but I hear you. It would be much more difficult.
Well, it would definitely put a crimp in things.
Yeah.
And that would make them feel better because they are against all guns. They won't even touch a gun. If you have a gun, they get all bent out of shape and they get nervous. Just repeal the Second Amendment, which you have the right to do, and you're good. You're good to go. So why don't you do that instead of complaining?
Right. But I'm really focusing on the whole aspect of the stupidity factor of...
It's unbelievable how dumb that was to do.
And she also keeps saying...
She got fired so fast... I mean, CBS must be very sensitive because she got fired within hours once they found out about this post.
And this is not just a slacker, you know.
She was a vice president.
Vice president in business affairs. I mean, just absolutely terrible.
And a lawyer. She should have known better.
And by the way, if somebody believes something, however twisted it is, all right, you know, have at it. You know what I'm saying? It's your opinion, whatever, however stupid. My opinions may be stupid about something else that you believe, you know, whatever. But to say things like that in public and to just, you know, I just teach people a lesson. I mean, in a very twisted sense, I wish people would get the hint from this in a bigger way and just shut their mouths on these ridiculous platforms anyway, because this stuff is just gushing of just evil, stupid, idiotic remarks, the way people feel they could just go out there and write whatever they want anytime they want, regardless of who it hurts or what, it, you know, it's just stupid.
Yeah. Agreed.
National Federation of Retailers, the NRF, not to be confused with the NRA, forecasts that, although I guess gun sales are in this particular index because they're forecasting that it's going to be a 3.6 to a 4.7, excuse me, a 3.6 to a 4% rise in holiday sales during the November to December period for a total of, $678 to $682 billion. Now, let me tell you something. bull crap. They're always
wrong. I'm kind of thinking bull crap too.
They're always wrong. They're so wrong. I don't even know why they do this. They've been wrong forever, and they're usually wrong to the high side. And I think it's because maybe they're looking to maybe get people excited and create enthusiasm or something before the holidays. Like, oh, everybody's going to be out there buying. You better get out there too. I don't know. I don't know why they put these numbers out, because it
doesn't seem to do much.
It's stupid.
Well, of course, then again, you don't know. It's possible if they didn't put these numbers out, it would be really bad.
I've never seen them forecast a decline that I recall on the first first go round. So
yeah.
Now I have a question for you.
Okay.
What are you writing for PC Magazine?
I just finished that this morning too. What was it? It was about, oh man, again. It's like the running gag.
By the way, people wait on the show. They wait to hear this go on, you know. They love it. They're cracking up in the chat room.
Oh yeah, I got it.
Oh, they're going.
So what it is, I wrote an article describing the 30-year cycle of artificial intelligence mania.
Oh.
It began in 1956 with the precursor to the Lisp language, and there was a big to-do about AI.
What language?
Then in the 80s, we had another big to-do that was really out of control, and it ended up with, I think it contributed to the collapse of the Japanese economy, which has never recovered, which of course was in 1989. Hmm. And now we have it again 30 years later with this, everyone talking about AI this and AI that, and it's bull crap. We're not even close to AI. And the thing that gets me about is Elon Musk and Satya Nadella of Microsoft. They're all, ooh, AI could kill everybody. And AI can't do anything, can't shoot a gun. I wrote about that.
The whole AI thing is just, I find it to be, it's spread into so many other, I mean, like I talked to you about this before, I think last week, the word algo.
Yeah, algo.
The algo. I mean, algo,
that's Adam's favorite word.
I mean, what the algo is like, you know, what it used to mean and what it means. Everything's an algo, everything. Anything that a computer does is an algo. I mean, and the thought of somebody, I think the greatest use of AI, if that's even close, is some of these bots they have for answering some very basic questions that you may have because you're too lazy to look it up yourself on the web. But I think that otherwise...
It used to be called an expert system in the 80s.
Yeah. What was the first language you said back in the 50s?
Well, the first language was IPL, which morphed really quickly into Lisp, which is still in use. I mean, Lisp is kind of the language that runs Autodesk.
Don't you think that using the word Lisp, to describe somebody that has a Lisp is mean?
Yeah? I mean, is it? Okay.
Well, you got an S in there. It's not nice. I got a Lisp. It's just, I'm just saying, it's not a nice thing. Anyway, let's get to the stocks. It's a game that we play. It's not an offer to buy or sell anything. It's not a recommendation on our part. It's just a simple game that we play to come up with some things. And I got to tell you something before we even get to it. We got a mean green sheet going on here.
Yes, it is very green. I think there's only one and it's been taken off, I believe.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken.
So John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may own any of the positions that are mentioned. If you do decide for whatever reason, you're out of your mind in a moment of insanity, decide, hey, I'm going to invest with that. Please do yourself a favor. Go get some financial advice from an expert. Do your research. Do your homework before you do so, because we're not going to even pay attention to you if you're crying because you're losing money.
So the only, Wells Fargo got taken off, but the only red on this list is Target, and it's not really, it's only minus 1%, 1.4, restocking or some argument you had. Everything else is, nothing's really kicking butt except for maybe Biogen, which is Baker Brothers.
Biogen.
Baker or Brothers. Biogen.
Yeah.
By Gene. Well, what do
you
mean?
Baker Brothers got you a 49% kicker and a 19% kicker with Alexian. Two Baker Bros. You just go, wait, we got three Baker Bros on here. Wait a second. One, two, no, just two.
There's only two.
I'm seeing twice. You should just go find out what they're doing.
Yeah, just invest whatever they do.
Yeah,
just do the same.
Yeah.
They seem to know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Currently, and by the way, in this short, I have a GoDaddy short that is actually still winning. It's still in the green. I think that's kind of cool.
Yep, found or selling.
Now, I have one pick maybe I was thinking about.
What you got?
Well, it is, let me get the name. Oh, by the way, Tiffany also, which I think, Tiffany, which I picked before, is also getting more action.
Where is Tiffany on this list? It's off the list.
I think it must have got, I don't see how it could have gotten whipsawed. I'm looking at the chart.
It's off.
It's bull crap. It shouldn't be off.
I have a 5.46% loss on it. You got into it at 92. It came out at 87. I'll check my numbers on this, but we have a system that does this automatically for us.
Okay, well, I'd like to take a look because I'm looking at the chart of Tiffany and just going straight up, and it's still going straight up, and I don't see how I could have possibly gotten whipsawed off that thing.
I will take a look at it. I'm gonna write this down right now. And by the way, if you want to see the actual performance of any of these things at a live ticket, over on DH Unplugged, click on the weekly stock picks. Let me write down Tiff. Check bullcrap, right?
Yeah, bullcrap.
Bullcrap. We'll call them bullcrap. All right. Which one do you have now?
Okay. I think I'm going to go with ITCI. And this is an insider deal again. And I also, I like the chart. Now, this insider, I will say this, he's not what I would consider a trader that has much of a track record except this one company. But he keeps buying it. And he bought it at 14. And I'll give you his kind of his history.
It's from Intracellular November. Therapies.
Yeah. It's from last November. Buy at 14, buy at 15, buy at 14, buy at 14, buy at 24, buy at 29. Mm. Buy at 14, buy at 16, buy at 16, buy at 15. So he's a buyer. And he bought a bunch of it at 24 is when he bought the most. He bought $15 million worth. And since if he had sold that same amount then and then picked it up at 15, he would have shown me some skills. So he's not a trader. He's just a guy who buys and buys and buys and buys. And obviously got very overconfident.
Yeah, it's at 16 now.
Yeah, it goes back down to 16. But I'm looking at the chart and I'm thinking, this is kind of an interesting little movement it's making. So I'm going to put it on the list, take a chance.
Well, let me tell you one I have, and I put this on the list earlier today, and it moved up dramatically throughout the day. So now it's up 18% just today.
Yeah.
This is a company called ShotSpotter.
Oh, yeah, I know them.
Right? So let me tell you what they do. So basically what this does is, and I know actually I think it was a Broward Sheriff's had this. One of my friends was telling me about how they use
it. We have
this.
It in Oakland.
Okay, so what happens is, This technology allows for police departments and law enforcement individuals to actually identify very accurately from where a gunshot is coming from when it's fired. So I don't know if they triangulate using them.
They have audio sensors all over the place, mm-hmm. and they triangulate where the shot came from, and they also apparently have a filtering technology that can tell a shot from a firecracker.
Or from maybe a car backfiring.
Right.
So the company is called ShotSpotter. Now, I started to look for a few things. Let me just tell you the list, right? I'm thinking, who can we, not to profit on the misery, but let's just be realistic. We're in the business of investing, right? So thinking about maybe shorting Live Nation. People may be concerned about going to concerts, I'm thinking to myself, right? Maybe looking at some of the Vegas and venues and things like that. Maybe short some of the Las Vegas Sands a win or, any of these companies. Okay, no, that's not so good. I say, I have an idea. Let me find the companies that make metal detectors because I am going to be darn sure that all these hotels around the country now are going to have to, you're going to have to walk through a metal detector to get into their hotel, right?
I am not buying into that.
Well, I couldn't find a company anyway. I couldn't find a publicly traded company that really has a carve out in the area of one of a stand up metal detectors.
That's interesting. You'd think there would be.
Yeah. And they could be part of, like, GE has those, but, you know, you're not buying GE. You know what I'm saying? It's only a small part of their total. So ShotSpotter got ramped up the last couple of days. This was an IPO that came out a few months ago. It didn't do very well. It dipped down to the $9 or $10 range. It came back to about the $14 where it was. Now it's trading at about $17 per share. Again, I would think that this could be something that is going to be used as a potential deterrent, because if you know that your city has this and that the cops can much, you know, in a much faster way find you, and especially with all the noise that's going to come out of this event about how to protect our city from guns and things like that and violence, I just thought it would be a good idea to put on the list. Symbol SSTI.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I didn't know it was public, and I think it's probably a good investment. They seem to have their act together, and I like the technology, and it seems to work.
Yeah, I heard it works, by the way. I heard from the police department here, the people that I know, they said it definitely works. Now, they said they may not be keeping it because of the price points. It's very expensive.
Ah.
And that they got it on loaner as a test.
Ah, it's expensive. Well, that's not good for little towns like Oakland
right.
that are broke.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, it's not good for any town that's broke. So maybe they should consider, or maybe a competitor should come along and do it cheaper.
Yeah, but
I mean, I don't see why it's. Here's what I look at this, and I don't know what they're doing that can't be done cheaper. You need an audio sensor. You need an internet connection. You need a little processing power around the sensor that could talk to the internet. It's on telephone poles. There's usually something flying by you can latch on to in terms of internet. And then you just need some central location processing.
It's not just one sensor. It's a lot of sensors.
Yeah, you have probably hundreds. But how much does that cost? Especially, they're obviously doing it on a lease basis. They're not just selling a system to a city.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe it just has to be expensive. I'm not sure.
All right, we're going to leave it at that. Again, you can follow John T. Dvorak at The Real Dvorak. Read his PC Magazine article each and every week. You can listen to No Agenda on Thursdays and Sundays. And all the great stuff and deconstructions they do about the current news and the news of the future and alternative universes. By the way,
the news of the future.
I get dizzy when you go to the B.
Oh, you mean when we change dimensions? Oh,
it gets me so nauseated. that is a spooky dooky rip that he put together there for that thing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Brings a dog over.
We'll be back again next Tuesday night, 9:00.
Okay, see you then.
All right, bye-bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.